Hey y'all, this is Bree Bagwell, and I'm going to recap this Blue Edmondson podcast that is so exciting for me because I'm a big fan of him and I have been for a long time. And as you'll find out, he's been on a multi-year hiatus, but he's back. Like we talk about, Texas music staple and legend Wade Bowen is producing his new project, which we are highly anticipating. So in these recaps, I'm kind of talking about the things we may have skimmed over or people that you don't know. And in this episode, we talk about Lloyd Maines, who we talk about a lot on this podcast, actually. And I've never really introduced him properly, but he's a Grammy Award-winning Texas-based producer, session player, musician, and he's in the Austin City Limits Hall of Fame. No big deal. Also, his daughter's Natalie, who is the lead singer of the band The Chicks. Anyway, we also talk about our friend Brandon Jenkins, who passed away, unfortunately, in 2018 from heart surgery complications, and he's dearly missed and remembered by all of us. So here is my friend, BLEU, Blue Edmondson. Enjoy.
Did you know back in 1845 that Steamboat was actually Texas? And every year for 22 consecutive years, they have sold out Steamboat Music Fest. It's going to sell out again. This is Bree Bagwell inviting you to the coolest music fest in Steamboat, Colorado. It happens every January. You've seen it. Have you not been? What are you waiting for? It is the original Texas Music Festival with over 50 bands in the Texas and Red Dirt music scene. You never know. Kevin Fowler might be just eating lunch next to you one day. With the Steamboat Music Fest package, you get 6 days of mountainside lodging, 4 days of lift passes, one night lift pass. Don't miss out. You're going to have so much FOMO if you're watching on social media. So just go to themusicfest.com, sign up for that email newsletter. You can get on the wait list. You never know. Steamboat Music Fest, down home, up high. Come get real with us. Steamboat Music Fest. Hey everyone, this is Bree Bagwell and Whiskey here with the Only Vans podcast, and I'm here to tell you about my friend Stacy Thomas with Lakeside Tax. Stacy does taxes, and not just Texas taxes, and not the simple stuff. Stacy is an EA, which means she is an enrolled agent of the IRS, which sounds fancy because it is fancy. Wherever you live, Stacy and her team of people can help, and they specialize in small business needs for like little entrepreneur, self-employed people like me. She is also a certified QuickBooks Pro Advisor, and she has two more certified QuickBooks Pro Advisors on her team. So did you get a love letter from the IRS? By love letter, I mean like an uh-oh letter. If you did, don't worry. Stacy handles tax resolution cases, and her team also handles bookkeeping and payroll. So wherever you live, call Stacy Thomas at Lakeside Tax today. Her phone number is 903-447-2710. Also go to lakesidetax.com. Whiskey really wants you to call Lakeside Tax and tell her we sent you.
Also, yeah. I'd been through that kind of grinder where you were doing 170 shows a year and you were just going, oh, this place wants us to come? Yeah, let's do it. This is how you do it. You know, you get these word of mouth and you play Bob's Chuckle Face Hut in wherever, and you set up and there's going to be nobody there, and you're probably going to lose a little money, but God damn it, you're doing it, you know, and you're...
And you think it's going to
pay off.
You're
creating art, you know, and all this stuff, and it's not sustainable, you know, physically.
Hey, hey, everybody. This is Bree Bagwell, and this is my podcast, Only Vans, where I talk to my friends in my van.
This is our first episode we are recording where I have gotten some constructive criticism that I asked for. So I'm just warning everybody. It's just kind of exciting because I was doing things such as not introducing the guests at all so people wouldn't know who I was talking to.
Well, you definitely better do that on this one because...
No.
98.2% probably have zero idea.
No, that's not true. That's not true. And also, I always like to just start and not actually start. Can you put more of him in my headphones if you don't mind?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. You too, you need some?
No, I'm just saying turn me up in her phones.
Yeah.
She needs the greatness.
Yeah. Well, you do have a really, really cool voice. You have one of my... Oh, there we go. You have one of my favorite singing voices of all time.
Oh, you're very kind to say that. I don't think I have a singing voice, much of one. That's very interesting.
It's very convincing. Like you can be.
I'll take that. Yeah, that's a even bigger compliment. Thank you for that. I'm in awe of people like yourself who can really croon. You know, I can't. I just kind of bark it out and hopefully it sounds okay. You
know, Blue Edmondson, barking it out since
barking
2000.
Barking out the truth since 2000 and, yeah.
Something.
When did my first one come out? 2002? Yeah.
Lost Boy was 2007, I looked.
Mm-hmm.
This is my friend Blue Edmondson, and Lost Boy was like...
Are these shorts too short for this podcast?
What? Well, it's too late now.
I'm getting... Get creamy white man thighs in my face. All right, go ahead.
You look great.
Thank you.
I always worry. I'm sitting back like this because everyone's always very self-conscious of their stomach rolls on this thing. But we're sitting down, but I just thought I'd sit like this because then it...
Do it laying down.
Then it won't be. This right. is my friend Blue
Edmondson. Cash. Keep it cash.
But when I was in college,
sure,
Lost Boy was like the record. Like you were... You are a staple of the Texas music scene. You are a legendary human. You are one of the people that was a pioneer of this genre. I really feel that way about you.
That's very kind of you to say. Thank you.
Do you feel like that about yourself?
No, I do. I came along in a version of this kind of music that kind of, you know... going back to the 60s and 70s, this kind of genre was always around, obviously, and Austin had a lot to do with it. And then it, I don't know, in the 80s and 90s, really what it was more about the rock scene, you know. Denton, Fort Worth, I think, had a pretty good one. Dallas certainly did. And then it kind of came, the country stuff started, you know, kind of came to the forefront. And so young, dumb idiots had to start bands and start doing that. And I just happened to coincide when I fell in love with Robert Earl Keen in high school. It was the first time, I think, maybe I was kind of a challenged kid, because I don't know that I ever thought about music in that way, that I just assumed that if you heard somebody singing it, that they wrote it, you know, which makes it so much more emotionally, easily to emotionally get invested in a song if you actually believe the person that's not universal, obviously, but. Point is knowing that Robert Earl Keen, which led to Lyle Lovett and people like that, wrote their own stuff, you know, turned a light bulb on for me, and I was like, so I got super into it, and that's kind of led to the dropping out of college and stupidly following a dream. Well, not stupidly, it has worked out, but that was the basis of it all, really.
Right. And you were kind of on the heavier edge of Texas music, you know, like I feel like you were one of the first ones that were like,
yeah,
rock
was
and roll in it,
sort of. Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, I certainly of my friends and kind of my peers, maybe, and the people in my class, it wasn't super, like, you wouldn't tell a rock band that I was rock, you know. They'd probably be like, what are you talking about? But I certainly was more on that part of the spectrum than most of my friends, who were very fiddle heavy, and especially at that time, fiddle heavy and
beer drinking,
pedal steel, and heavy. Yeah, kind of honky tonkish, you know. Yeah. Which is, they're my friends for a reason, and I'm fans of theirs for a reason. But I don't know why my writing doesn't lend itself to that, and it's actually something that I want to get kind of explore more in the future, in terms of writing, is that side of it, the more kind of honky tonkish, not
hokey,
not
but
Charlie Crockett, that kind of honky tonk. You know, I could never go that far and still feel authentic at all, but kind of more country-ish, you know? The stuff you do is a great example of that, which I think has a lot of roots in 90s country, which was a really cool lane, and it's what I grew up on, really, for the most part, until I found the guys like Robert Earl and Lyle Lovett and
right.
Jerry Jeff, and when I dove into them pretty hardcore freshman year of high school, sophomore year of high school, that kind of went a different way, and I stopped listening to a lot of stuff on the radio. But anyway,
yeah, I love that, and it's kind of crazy how everyone that I have on this podcast has those same sort of influences, no matter what direction you end up going. That's kind of the beginning for a lot of people. That's their moment where they're like, "Ooh, I want to do that. I want to be authentic to myself and write my own things and go play my own shows." And then now, I mean, I don't want to jump too far ahead. I still want to, but like your big, how'd you find Finger on the Trigger, and like how did that come about, and do you even know how many streams that has? I looked today.
Mm-mm. I don't know. How do you look? Is that stupid?
No, it's just great.
Well,
it makes me happy
sure
that
is,
you're blissfully unaware of how to figure that out.
I legitimately have no idea.
That's so great, Blue. Please keep that forever. Because when you start checking it, or you're checking your artists, Spotify for artists, and seeing how many people are listening right now, and then it can make you crazy.
That whole world is I got zero idea.
Well, Finger on the Trigger and $50 and Flask of Crown were the first two I just saw on there, but I can't remember which one's which, but one is like 14 million and one is like 7 million.
Oh, right on.
Like really doing it.
That's really cool.
But they are such great, I mean, those are like anthems of our scene, and you just perform them so well.
That's kind of you to say. Finger on the Trigger was, well, Brandon Jenkins wrote that, and we were good friends, and really it was pretty organic. He came out, it was on one of his records, and several years before I gotten a hold of it or really even paid attention, I think I was driving to a show somewhere to play, and I just threw on his CD. At the time there was no streaming, and it caught my attention, and I remember thinking how, speaking of authentic and kind of how visceral things can get, even the music that he had put to his song, it was a real juxtaposition in terms of it's kind of upbeat, you know, it kind of felt like a jaunty roll your windows.
Yeah.
and it clashed so hard with the lyrics, which I thought was interesting and kind of cool. But I called him, or I texted him probably. I think texting was around at the time.
Let's not date ourselves.
And said, I'm going to start covering it. I'm going to get me and the band are going to work it up, a couple sound checks or whatever, and we'll just start doing it. But I'm going to make it much, a little darker, you know, much kind of harder, the way we do it. Is that cool? And blah, blah, blah. He's like, yeah, totally. Look forward to hearing it. And we just started doing it, and it happened to be about 3, 4, 5, 6 months maybe before we went going to the studio to do Lost Boy. And pretty much from night one that we threw it in the set, didn't matter where we were at, you know, didn't matter what state or what city or whatever. It's pretty universal from the get-go that people dug it, you know.
Yeah.
And it did something to them. So I called him, you know, after a couple months, texted him again, or called him and said, I want to cut it. Is that cool with you? He said, yeah, for sure. I said, great. Love you. Peace. And we cut it, and it just happened. It never went. I think it went to radio maybe, I don't know, 6 months after the record came out, with a little radio edit, because there's a F-bomb in there in the original. But I don't think it was like super pushed or anything, you know. It's not like it went to number whatever. It got a lot of its momentum from just live stuff and word of mouth, you know. And it got, as you said, I guess it's been.
It's so good. I listen
to a lot,
so
but
it's
Brandon's writing and how he was really good at kind of getting into that headspace, you know. And it's something I struggle with in my writing, because I want to get there too, be as honest as you can and doing it. And sometimes you accidentally do it, and sometimes you can try too hard. But he was always really good at kind of getting into that headspace that song is talking about, and he relies a lot on personal, you know, experience. So I knew it to be very, very authentic, and it made me happy to sing it. And then when you see and you read what people write to you or what they say to you after a show or something, it's pretty incredible. So God bless Brandon for what he did while he was here.
Yeah. Taken from us much too soon.
Much too soon, yeah.
I don't love that.
Mm-mm.
But what a great writer.
Absolutely.
And $50 and a Flask of Crown was a Matt Powell song.
Mm-hmm.
When I moved to Austin, I was going to school in Austin. My first gig was at Mother Egan's on 6th Street, and I was in college, and Matt used to play there after me, and he bought me my first microphone. I will never forget it. I think I ended up losing it, but he was like, you need to be a singer, and it was really nice of him to do that.
For sure.
But what a great song. What a great writer. I wonder what he's up to now. Do you keep in touch with him at all?
I don't. I haven't talked to him in quite a long time. Hopefully he's very successful wherever he's doing, because he was a really talented guy. Yeah, that... again, kind of happened organically. When I was going in to do my first record, and I was spending a lot of time here in South Austin with friends at their house, and it kind of became a meeting house. And Matt was of just dudes that played guitar and liked to drink and whatever, watch sports. And there was about 5 or 6 of us that hung out in this house all the time, and Matt was one of them. And I was always really impressed by how talented he was and his guitar playing, and his voice is really cool.
Yeah.
And the whole bit, and he was the best of all of us hanging around. Brian Rung was there, who's a really, really talented dude too, who I haven't seen in far too long. But Matt used to, we would go and he would play every Tuesdays or Wednesdays, one of those nights. I think he played most nights. He had a regular weekly gig playing at random bars, and we would go in and just to support him and stuff and get all drunk and loud and be
fun.
Yeah,
he used to like whiskey, and I used to not understand, but now I like whiskey, and now I understand.
And now you understand. Opens your eyes.
Yeah.
He used to play 50, this is a song he'd written, $50 and Flash Crown, and on nights that there were people there, they really enjoyed it. And then even on nights where there may be me and my friends were five of the people in the bar, and maybe there was only a handful of others, some slow night, even the handful of others would stop and listen, and, you know, and either they knew it. He had never recorded it, never went on a record at that time. But they just recognize, and it immediately makes you, you know, immediately. And I, as a dumb 21-year-old, recognized that. And I was going in to do my first record with Lloyd Maines here in Austin, and I didn't have, to my mind, any kind of song like that. You know, you got to understand, too, at that time, at least I thought it was important. Pat was becoming, well, at that point, probably was the man.
Pat Green.
Ragweed was coming up right behind him. Corey Morrow was doing great along with Pat and just killing it. And there were a few other names that were just, and they all had these fun drinking songs or fun kind of things that the entire crowd would come together, you know, and sing with them and be happy and whatever. And I didn't think I had one of those, and I tried to write those, and they always sounded so friggin' corny and gross.
Same. Me
too. Know?
Yeah.
I don't do that anymore just because I know it's a futile endeavor, but point is I had nine songs that I'd written, and I wanted, so I asked him if I could do it, and he's like, I remember him being kind of like, why would you want to, you're going in with Lloyd, I know he had a lot of respect for Lloyd Maines, and he was like, you're going in to do a record with him, and you're going, why do you want to do that? And I was like, I think it'll be cool. Is the point. And so we did. We went in and cut it. Had Matt, out of respect for him and his talent, I wanted him to come in and sing on it and play on it, you know, and be a part of it because he loved Lloyd Maines. He got to be in the studio. And I was sitting there watching, you know, all this stuff. This first time I'd been in there. It was really cool.
Your first
really
time?
Cool, big
oh, my
deal.
Gosh.
Yeah, it was massive.
That's amazing.
And we did it. And then some DJ in Houston, really, I think, was the first kind of market, found it. I had mailed it to him. It wasn't ever, I didn't have a team or people or whatever. Right. I didn't even know how he did it. I literally just sat on my floor and put my CD in 150 envelopes and got a directory and wrote
been there,
the,
done
the
that.
Idea. Yeah, and sent it to the radio station. Just went, I guess this is how you do it.
Hey, this is Bree Bagwell, and if you want to listen to this podcast early and ad-free, subscribe to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/BreeBagwell.
Are you ready to take your merchandise to the next level? Well, just ask me who I use, and that is CH Lone Star Promo. They specialize in screen printing and direct-to-garment, embroidery, laser engraving, anything promo-related, they can do it. Step up your merch game now with CH Lone Star Promo and tell them Brian Whiskey sent you.
And Station in Houston started spinning it, and then eventually others did too, certainly in Texas, and it became a thing, you know, right. Really early on. I mean, that, like I said, that was my first record, and I didn't have, it's not like it was promoted or anything. I didn't know how to do that. You just play your weekly gig and tell people, I got a real life record right. coming out. I got a real CD. That was kind of all I had going for me, but the Houston market grabbed a hold of $50 and Flash Crown and made it something, you know, which was so cool and so intimidating to go from playing to 28 people in some bar on a Tuesday night and wherever, and I couldn't even get gigs then. I was just kind of going between Houston and Dallas, really. And then playing to, all of a sudden the bar has 1,500 people in it or whatever, and they're all like, woo, you know, we love this song. Let's see what else you got, you know. And I was not prepared for that and don't even know if I have the amount of talent that it requires to wade through that and come out the other side very, very well. But
you did it, though.
It was a hell of a ride. It was
fun.
That
was being thrown in headfirst, for sure.
It was fun, yeah.
And I didn't mean to bring up, like, two of the songs that you didn't write, but I think it's fascinating.
That's okay. I'm very proud that we did it, and they're good songs. And of the six records that I have, I think I haven't. There's four songs I think that I haven't written or co-written. So, and I do that on, you know, it's not like on every record I'm putting two or three, whatever. But
I think it's important because I like to write my covers. Own stuff too. But you also have to, like, I recognize that I'm not as good of an anthem-y writer, and the ones that I've cut outside are like some of my biggest ones. And it's like, oh well, being able to recognize where your weak spot is as a writer, and being like, well, it's okay. Like, you can't be the person that writes. I can't be the person that writes a heartbreak song and also am really great at anthem-y songs. It's just not, and it's okay, and that's okay. And if I can go find them elsewhere and people love them and relate to them, that's like, totally fine.
Mm-hmm. And that was young me too, that it kind of thought that. I mean, I can't tell you how many songs that I've heard since then. I mean, you've grown up a lot, and I don't look at it that way anymore, because I've heard so many songs that have become anthemic or become these huge massive crowd favorites that either didn't sound like that on the record. Like, you could tell that wasn't the way they were going for it creatively. It just happened.
Yeah.
Which is really fun to watch. I think Turnpike has several songs like that, you know, that just all of a sudden became these anthemic thing. And you see why afterwards, but probably going in, they weren't like, okay, and then 7,000 people are going to go on this line. You know what I mean? So it's a little different, but, so I don't look at it necessarily like that anymore, because the most chill kind of whatever song, you never know what line is going to become kind of this anthemic thing, you know?
Yeah. So, and now jumping, I mean, Yard Sale is one of my favorites, kind of, but I think rambling, Yard Sale was, no, you're doing
first podcast in a long time.
Shut your mouth. Yard Sale was on the 2015 Augustus. Was that mm-hmm. was the, and I love that, you know, I love that song. That's always been one of my favorite songs of yours.
Thank you.
But we've been waiting for a Blue Edmondson resurgence, but you had so much impact on me one time that you were like, listen, I want to take a break. And I told my agent, I'm playing for this much, and if it's not that much, I'm not doing it. And I have done that a couple times since that conversation, and I was like, Blue Edmondson gave me the freedom to say, you know what, I need a minute, and I'm not playing unless it's this much. And when I get it, it's like, oh, people do pay it.
Sure.
And they want you for that much, and then you feel good about giving away your time and your energy for X amount of dollars.
Well, you'd be shocked, well, maybe you wouldn't, but how many people that do this for a living that are in just probably entertainment in general, but certainly music, have a pretty low self-worth. And I know I did for years and years and years, probably still do on some level, but so you kind of sell yourself short so much. And I'd been through that kind of grinder where you were doing 170 shows a year and you were just going, oh, this place wants us to come. Yeah, let's do it. This is how you do it. You know, you get these word of mouth and you play Bob's Chuckle Face Hut in wherever, and you set up and there's going to be nobody there, and you're probably going to lose a little money, but God damn it, you're doing it, you know, and you're,
and you think it's going to
pay off.
You're
creating art, you know, and all this stuff, and it just, it's not sustainable, you know, physically. Certainly not as a singer.
Totally.
Because you're just going too hard. And the self-worth thing is you just kind of, you just put yourself on, just draw a line in the sand, you know, mentally, and say, this is what I think I'm going to do from here on out, you know. And you're going to lose some, but God, the feeling, you know, psychologically, the feeling you get is,
and people treat you better when you raise your prices. That's another thing that I found. I was, well, like, oh,
it's probably just assertion. It's not even, you know, the price. When you stand up and you go, hey, I love you, man, but this is what I gotta have to make this work for me. You know, you got leverage. They want you there.
Right.
You know, they want to hear your songs. They, you know.
I grind it. I did it. I grounded so hard. I grinded it so hard that now it's like, well, I'm actually back grinding this month. This is a wild month for me, but I'm doing it in all these different states I haven't been to. I'm doing 12 different states this month. 22 shows.
12 states this month.
22 shows in 12 states. Ooh. I might die. This might be the last time you see me.
What, like West Coast, East Coast?
Yeah,
what?
East Coast. But all the way up to New York, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and North Carolina, South Carolina, Chicago. And a lot of places I went before COVID that I haven't been back to because
of
COVID.
Are any going
to
be impacted by the hurricane stuff in Carolina?
I hope not. Oh my gosh.
Georgia,
North Carolina,
I guess,
we're so sorry. I'm not going to Asheville, but I mean, we are doing Raleigh, so that's on my list to talk to my agent today and make sure we can still go do that.
Sure, sure, sure.
It's so crazy, but I agree with you, and I really thought if
East
I play...
East Coast is fun.
I can't wait. Mm-hmm. People love Texas music on the East Coast. Like, they are, like, starving
There's
for
some
it.
Hardcores, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They have like, South Carolina Red Dirt Country Club, and then they have, like, North Carolina,
that.
And then they have Florida Red Dirt Country Club.
Shows you how long it's been since I've been out there. I mean, it's probably been a decade since I went up through there, but they were all, you know... Even though the crowds may have been smaller than other places, they were always really super cool. So.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Take comfort in knowing that when you go back, they're going to be like, well, which is one of the
I'd
things
I'd love to go back. I don't know where I would play, but you know all the venues and stuff. But.
I do, but I'm mostly opening these runs. So.
Good. That's the way to do it.
Hopefully go back and headline it. You know, building again after COVID, it was kind of like a start over. But that was one thing I had to talk to you about, because when I went to Key West, I cannot tell you the amount of people that came up to me or messaged me or commented on my Facebook, hey, because I think they know we're friends, like, Blue Edmondson's here. Are you going to get him up to sing? Is Blue going to get up to sing? When's Blue playing? Where's he
saying? That's
I was
nice
like, I was like the Blue Edmondson curator of
Key West.
Yeah. It was so awesome, and I was thrilled to see how much everyone was so excited that you
That's
were there.
Very cool that you say that, and that's very cool of them to say that. I don't know kind of my place in the world in terms of any of this stuff. You know, I took a hiatus for a while, mm-hmm. kind of get everything right, for that matter. So I don't know. So when you say stuff like that, even if you're making it up, it makes
I'm not
me
making
feel
it up.
Really, really good.
Do
about,
I look like I'm making it up? No. Punch you in the face.
I know you're an honest person.
Okay.
But it makes me feel pretty good about that. I would be walking down. Me and Stoney went to the Pirate Museum in Key West, which is it's a one-timer. You know, it's not one of those things you need to go back several times or necessarily go... grab your friends and say, guys, you got to get in here. But it's fun for idiots like us. They can just go in there and have fun on two stories of not much, but it's still cool. But the point is we'd be standing out there and people would, obviously Stoney would know him, but then a couple of people that would say, hey, Blue, what's up? You know, made me feel good too. That's a fun time down there in Key West. And I hope to go back this year if we can do it for sure, because, Last year was my first time to really hang out, you know, for 3 or 4 days, and I'd had nothing to do. I wasn't playing or anything. I was just hanging out with y'all, you know, and it was really, really cool. So I'd like to go back. But,
well, someone asked you to sing. Was it Wade? And you were like, "Nah, I'm good." You're like, "I'm not." You said something.
Yeah, like, well, in all honesty, I don't want to walk up there and people go, "Who?" But also, too, I hadn't sang in couple years, you know. I mean, outside of a few charity things that I've done, and God, I guess that's pretty much it. I hadn't played a show in years, and I didn't want to get up there and sound like an ass, you know.
Yeah.
And so you just go like, I'm cool hanging out, love you bro, woo, you know, whatever.
Or,
but
yeah, that's nice. Or when people invite you up and you don't have in-ears and everyone else does.
Yeah, that's like, a weird feeling too. That's a weird, so it weird. Sounds really, really weird.
I've done it so many
luckily
times.
I'm classically trained, so it's not really a problem.
I've done it so many times with Josh Abbott, which was like so wild. This last time they gave me an ear pack, but early on in my career, and I just was so excited to be there that I didn't really know the difference.
Yeah,
and now
that
I'm older, I'm so self-conscious
can't
about
hear a damn
like
thing. Right.
Yeah, I'm about being pitchy, and then there's phones everywhere, and I don't know about that. But now, speaking of Wade, I saw a social media picture of you and Wade Bowen. So
Wadrick Lamar Bowen.
He Wadrick Lamar. He's producing your new project.
Yeah.
You don't have to say anything about it, but if you want to, I would love to know everything about it, all the details.
I will say to this point, well, I would say that it's not quite done.
Okay.
I would say to this point, it's really, really cool to me, to my mind. Wade's got a few more things that he's cleaning up, and then we got a little bit more work. We flew to Nashville about 3 weeks ago or so and met Wade at Curb Studio there.
Cool.
And spent 3 or 4 days just kind of laying down the tracks, man. You know how that goes. And had a friggin' ball. It was an absolute blast. The whole process was the musicians, all the stuff.
It's the most fun.
That's the most fun for me is creating something out of thin air, you know, and putting it in concrete, for lack of a better term. It's a real thing, and letting the world hear it, regardless of what, you know, hopefully they go, oh, okay, not bad, that doesn't suck. But, so that's the most fun, it was the most fun for me. Point is that it's almost done.
Yes.
And I don't know exactly what's going to happen after it is done. I don't know how really it's, is if it's just releasing singles at this point. I don't know if it's an EP. I don't know if it's full record. I don't know. But
nobody
me
knows.
And Wade go back like car seats, and he's a fantastic dude. And he's really one of my good friends and has been for a long time. And he had done, we talked about this about a year ago. He goes, basically, are you going to come back and start making music again? And I said, yeah, I never had any intention of not to. Just a 6-month break turned into 8 years, pretty much, you know?
Yeah.
With a lot of stuff happening, a lot of great stuff happening after that. But so it just turned into a really, really long hiatus that I didn't know I was going to be taking. So we were talking, and he said, are you going to come back? I said, yeah. I said, do you want to get in the studio with me? Which I had known, but he had said, you know, I've done a lot of the stuff with Hold My Beer, and I really want to dive headlong into just producing. It's a lot of fun for me. And I said, okay, yeah, what makes sense to me to get in there with a friend and see what, if it sucks, it's probably my fault, and who cares? This is all going to be for the story. This is all, there's no, I don't, you know, there's no like, if it does this on the radio, there's no, if, are people going to buy it? I know to my mind that it's good, and I got to make it with a really good friend of mine, and that's what matters to me. So I said, fuck yeah, let's do it.
Dang.
And it took a while, schedules and all the sorts of stuff, but and songs, I had to come up with decent enough songs to both of our minds. And then it just happened a couple weeks ago, and so it's almost done. And
well, no one's more excited than me.
I don't know what I'm gonna call it, but
Reed Bagwell's best friend, Blue Edmondson's new record.
That'll go...
8-year hiatus is a
viral.
Cool name.
Yeah, it is cool.
Okay, well, we're already running out of time, but...
Sorry.
No.
I tend to
this
ramble
is great.
When
no, just, it's fun when it flies by, but you... We have to talk about your Greta. I call her Greta.
Greta.
Because she's great.
She is great.
And you have you have the cutest human, and then I was like, you should make another one, and then you did.
Yeah, that's going to be here probably in the next... 2-4 days maybe.
Oh, like
this week.
Why are you here right now? What if it's right now?
She's probably asking the same thing.
She's like,
that makes me.
I used to like Brie Bagwell, and then
that makes
I had my
heart
baby
a little
all
heavy.
By myself.
Right? Yeah. No. She says, I asked that actually this morning, and she said, I don't think it's going to be today. I think I feel okay.
Okay.
But it could be whenever, soon. And so yes, and judging by all the sonogram pictures, and there's many, he's going to be another. Really, really cute little kid. He's a boy. Chapel.
Oh my gosh, that's so cute. Did you guys hike to your wedding photos?
Your
wedding photos?
Yes,
are in Big Bend, like on the top of a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I met her in Key West, and she was so, like, I walked away like, okay, I love her. She's
great,
awesome. Yeah. Then Paulie Sin, my boyfriend, comes running up to me, and he was like, we just got invited to Terra Lingua. That's like his, that's his spiritual place. And so now we're supposed to go. We're actually supposed to triple date with you and Stoney and Cassie to do.
Yeah, he's been, in all honesty, he's been hitting me up about it too.
Stoney?
I have a house there. And
yes.
It's just 2 years old or so, and I've fallen in love with Terra Lingua and Big Bend. And just, I never thought I'd be a desert guy. And I just went out there and I went, Jesus Christ.
It's the best.
Phenomenal.
Well, we should definitely do it because Cassie was texting me about it, but I was played with Stoney. We're talking about Stoney LaRue. I played with him on Saturday, and my band is still recovering. They got stonied. They hadn't gotten stonied before.
Stonied.
It's
It's a long night.
It's a
very
long
fruitful
night.
Most times, but it's
a lot
it's
of
a long
Jager
night.
Bombs from Kiko.
Uh-huh.
But it was the most fun.
I've learned to say no at a certain point. You know, where it can get a little obscene. You know, just it can get gross with enough Jager. I mean, I don't think Jager should be legal, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, I felt pretty bad the next day, and I'm usually pretty much a trooper, but I think it was the Jager. Or the Red Bull, the sugar. And then last thing I want to talk about, do you remember the day that we met? I was in College Station, and you were at Harry's, and you put headphones on, and John, he played my record for you, like, through the headphones at Harry's, and you were like, yeah, man, cool. And I was so, like, stressed out that Blue Edmondson was listening to my record, and then we walked out, and we were all partying, and somebody fired gunshots in Northgate
College Station of all places. Now this was 20 years ago, 15
not
years ago.
Not 15.
I know. Well, you're still sorry.
No, I don't care. But I think it was like I would say like 2010.
Yeah, I guess you're right. And that was a of all places, as you're walking around the streets, you wouldn't think that it would be in College Station. I lived there for a couple of years, and the crime was nothing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a freaky night. We were going, we had a group of us, maybe five or six of us, and we were going from bar to bar.
We were
right?
going to Church Street Barbecue. Remember Church Street?
Yeah, absolutely, I do.
That's where it was.
The first time I ever went to Northgate, period, it was still like not a grass field, a mud kind of or dirt patch. Anyway, yeah, that was freaky and scared the piss out of me, man.
You tackled me.
It had nothing to do with us. Yeah, I know.
You tackled.
I took it upon myself to save
everybody.
You, right.
And you, it wasn't just
it was
me.
Kinda, yeah,
it was not like, me. It was like you group tackled us, mm-hmm. and like Blue Edmondson laid on top of us to shield us from the gunshots.
Yeah, well, you know.
And it was so chivalrous. And I've been like, I had heard like, and just your music, I was like a little bit afraid of you. And I was like, oh, Blue Edmondson, you know what? You're a teddy bear.
Oh, that's very kind.
That will
of
take
to
a
say.
Gunshot for.
I didn't take anybody. Anything for sure.
Well, you acted like you were going to, but maybe it was the Jaeger bombs.
That's absolutely what it was.
I don't know what
yeah,
it was.
That was a crazy.
But after
night.
That, we were home.
Everybody was okay. Yeah. I was like, and we've been friends ever since.
We've been friends ever since. We got kicked out
and
of
I
the bar.
I love seeing you. I love hanging out and rapping with you, and it's a lot of fun. And I saw you just a few months ago at Saxon.
Yeah.
And you sounded flipping amazing.
Thank you. That's very nice of you.
I love your guts, and thank you for everything.
I love your guts, and y'all, please go listen to Blue Edmondson's whole catalog. Incredible writer, but also the new stuff that's coming out.
We are so
excited.
Me too.
I'm proud of you. It's I'm glad you took as much time as you needed, but it was about 7.5 years too long for me.
Thank you for that.
But who am I to say? So y'all check it out, blueedmondson.com. I don't know if that's right.
.net. I think a Japanese porn company has that now, and I mean that sincerely.
Okay,
when
just,
I took a break, everything went down. So go to blueedmondson.com, but I'm serious. I really do think it's Japanese porn. I think Django Walker told me the same thing happened to him.
No.
I stopped paying on my website, and Japanese porn guys took it, and I was like,
that's
yeah, I think that's what happened to me, and I mean that sincerely.
That's a lesson only Vans listeners.
I don't know. Find Twitter and Instagram, and I'm on there some. You can find me. You'll figure it out.
You'll figure it out. Okay, bye.
Bye. If you like what you see.